Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Good to see you, Daniel.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing very well. And the big subject today, it looks like, there's talk about an anonymous editorial from the New York Times. And anonymous means we don't know who wrote it and whether it's true or not. You know, sort of vague. But why is that unusual?
Yeah.
I think somebody's pointed out that they're part of the fake news. So instead of this being, you know, a major event, which I really think it is in many ways, but a major event is sort of part of the status quo, likely. But it is, you know, getting some kickback from it because there are some people both on left and right, and certainly the Trump people aren't very happy with this article. So it's... It's one design, and that's what we'll talk about, is what is the purpose of all this. And the one thing is that they're claiming that there's some groups in the White House or in the administration that are doing the Lord's work because he's out of bounds. And a lot of people, even his best friends, mentioned at times where he's over the board. But this is a little bit more than that. And there's some people who detest him, they hate him, they're jealous, and they can't get over the lost election. And he has an independent spirit, which the deep state does not like. So lo and behold, they came along and they're very critical, and we can talk about that. But they're calling themselves the steady state. The steady state. These are the guys that run the country. They're the old timers, and they have a steady hand, and they are to be listened to, and they don't like Trump. In order to do that, they must say that he belongs. They're competing with the deep state, so it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, other than the fact that they want everybody to look at them, but they won't tell us who they are. So it's sort of a mess. I think that it's interesting that it came up about the same time the Woodward book came out, and it looks like, well, you know, they're really piling on. But in some ways, they're not talking about Woodward today. they're talking about this editorial and why it was motivated and what it means. So, but there's a lot of talk on it. I can't see a lot of good. Decent people shouldn't cheer, you know, accusations and challenges, you know, from people who won't tell us who they are. You know, if there's an accuser in courts, the Constitution gives us the right to face our accusers. But in this political system, oh no, keep them secret and let them pile on and say anything or do anything. And even Woodward's book, you know, it's anonymous sources.
Yeah.
But you're supposed to accept every single word as gospel. And the people who want to do, and the people who are on the side of Trump don't. One thing for sure, it really has amplified the animosity between the two camps. This was not meant to settle things, and the word coup is being thrown around. And in many ways, it looks like maybe it's not going to be the physical coup in the next week or two, but they want to literally destroy the administration. But isn't it interesting that they had to concede a couple points to Trump, you know, on the economic things?
Yeah, it is true. And the thing is that the New York Times presented this as a brave act. We don't usually publish these anonymous things, but we're really going out there. And the fact is, it's really backfired on both sides, because the left-wing resistance is furious. This guy's a coward. Why doesn't he come out and say who he is? Why doesn't he really try to get Trump out? Certainly the Trump supporters aren't happy about this. So it's kind of backfired. But really, I think a little, maybe before we go into some of the content of this editorial, Peter Van Buren, our old friend of ours, spoke at our conference last year. Made some pretty good points on his Facebook page, and I think they're worth thinking about. First of all, he thinks that this is a trial balloon for a coup against Trump, and I think we probably would agree in some ways. But he makes a couple of good points. How far did the New York Times stray from journalism to political action to get this published? He's saying this piece probably wasn't slipped under the New York Times door by someone with a mask on. So how much did they collude with this so-called person? If he existed, did they persuade this person? Did they work with this person? Did they push the person to write certain things? What was the relationship between the New York Times as a journalistic organization and this person? He also said, did they irresponsibly elevate the author's status to make him sound more important than he is. And, you know, Matt Lee, who's the diplomatic editor of AP, he pointed out in a tweet earlier today, he said, when I started covering the State Department in 1999, it was generally accepted rule that senior official, quote unquote, had to be someone who was Senate confirmed, an ambassador, assistant secretary level, or above. Is that the case with the New York Times piece, or are they artificially elevating this person to give him higher stature?
You know, this isn't the first time there's dissension in an administration. Probably there's always some dissension. But in the old days, there were people, even as vice presidents, would be disgruntled with policy and on principle just resign their seat, you know, and then make their case. But that isn't the case. This is hiding from it. And they don't want to be confronted. And then there's a lot of speculation. So it is hardly an effort to save something good, because there's some that have claimed that they are claiming they're saving the system. They're saving the democratic process by doing this and by using a policy which is very undemocratic and sneaky and very praiseworthy, and they're doing this. So I don't know how they're going to accomplish what they want. And if you look at some of the positions they take, I am interested in they're alluding to foreign policy. They're criticizing Trump for dealing with dictators, like not every president has ever done that. But the people they list as dictators aren't the most vicious dictators in the world. It's very anti-Russian.
Yeah.
They're on the side of bashing Russia. And at the same time, they criticize him for dealing with those Russian dictators. But is there a dictator in Saudi Arabia?
Uh-huh.
I think there is one, and I don't think they follow civil liberties very well. But, so the whole thing is mumbo jumbo. It's sort of personalized. It's political power. It has nothing to do with principles of it. You know, we try to have a program where we see Trump doing something, we praise him, vice versa. But here, they mention a few things on the economic policy. But I tell you what, they really come down hard. I think they're motivated by hate and getting rid of him. And I think they've never run into somebody quite like this.
Yeah.
And they're terrified of losing influential power,
yeah.
Even though policies, significant policies, and I mentioned to you some of the things, they didn't get after him for badgering the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates,
or they
didn't badger him for bringing the troops home. They want him probably to send more troops out. The policies, the things that we would have complained about if we were in that position, we would have listed our list of grievances, which would have been a libertarian list on personal liberties and a different kind of foreign policy and a sound economic policy, but that isn't what we find here. This is the status quo is struggling to remain the status quo, and they want to be steady holders of power.
Yeah, and you mentioned the claim. One of the claims in the anonymous piece was Trump shows preference for autocrats and dictators, specifically mentioned Putin and Kim of North Korea. But this is the thing that we always run into as well when we talk about, when libertarians, when anti-war people talk about, we don't want to go after Assad, oh, you're an Assadist. We don't want to take out Saddam Hussein, oh, you're a Saddam lover. And this is exactly the kind of argumentation that they make and the neocons make. It's certainly very easy to argue that, in fact, by pursuing a better foreign policy with Russia, pursuing peace with North Korea, he's actually pursuing his election promises. He was very open about his election promises. So how can it be anti-democratic? But you talk about how we might list our list of grievances about Trump. Well, here I went through the article, this anonymous piece, and I did a kind of a bill of particulars. Here are the specific grievances that this cabal that he claims he's part of within the administration, here's what they have a problem. He's amoral. He's not moored in any first principles. He has misguided impulses. He was elected as a Republican but shows little affinity for conservative ideals. He's anti-trade and anti-democratic. He's impetuous, adversarial, petty, and ineffective. You know, I mean, which president could that not describe? Yeah. You know, which president? They certainly said it about Reagan, elected as a Republican, but not showing these ideals, misguided impulses. Which president didn't have that from Kennedy on? You know, you could imagine. So this is specifically the problem they have with him. It's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, you know, I think your point that this is not brand new. Others have been charged by the same things. The opposition party is always saying that about it. But what's different here is there's so much animosity, you know, that has driven them, is driving them nuts in many ways to this point where it's incessant. I keep thinking that everybody knows where we are on Trump, but it's to me almost like it's going to backfire on them. That how much garbage can they throw out there? And this, and you have already mentioned this, that some people think that this is way overdone. They'll lose credibility. Certainly the pro-Trump people aren't going to change their mind. And this is the first time I think we've seen where some decent liberal journalists are saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, isn't this over the top? And it'll be interesting to see. It'll be a fascinating election coming up here in a few months.
It's funny that you said that, because as I was going through the piece and writing down all these things, I was thinking, you know, because the big thing now is whodunit. Everyone's analyzing words, word usage, word patterns. Who might it be? Maybe it was McCain from beyond the grave, all these things. As I was reading it, I had that same thought. I thought, what if Trump himself did it, you know? Because in a way, this is a gift. You see everyone, see my backers, see what's going on here. Look what I'm fighting against, you know? So it may well have been himself. But here's another who, that aside, which it may be true, here's another clue as to who it may be, and you brought this up earlier. Here's the bright spots, according to this editorial. He did some good work on deregulation, some good work on tax reform, and some good work on having a more robust military. And I think that says a lot about the values of the people who wrote this.
You know, probably if we were writing something like this, we would bring up foreign policy, and we would bring up the military, and we would bring up about expenditures on national defense versus military spending.
Yeah.
That's something that people never think about. And they have made it sacred that every nickel in the DOD, the $1 trillion we spend, is all for, you know, for national defense. It's to defend us. It's for, you know, for saving America. And you have to be patriotic at the point where they never ask, well, what do we need for national defense? What do we need to defend ourselves rather than policing the world and also policing the world and spending money and satisfying the military-industrial complex? Here he is bragging about it. So the military-industrial complex, they wrote this thing. Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah,
they could have. I don't think they're going to complain.
Maybe the Atlantic Council did it. Here's a funny one. This is my comment to myself was shocker. Here's what was in the op-ed. What Trump doesn't grasp is that many of the senior officials in his own administration are working diligently from within to frustrate parts of his agenda. You know, oh, wow, tell us something we don't know. You know, I mean, what a shocker.
Yeah. Well, I think this little debate's going to go on for a while, and the resolution of this probably won't occur until a partial resolution will be in November. But it to me looks like it's more driven by personal hatred, personalities, unhappiness and shock. They're still in shock. And it also makes the point that I continuously make. We have the Republican establishment who, they're the ones who are in the administration. They're the ones who are supposedly undermine the president. But they also are in bed with the Democrats to blast him and to undermine him. So the Democrats in the Republican administration, they want to destroy Trump. And this is a concerted effort. So in many ways, bits and pieces, or the leadership in the Republican and Democratic parties, are usually good buddies. They pretend it. But this, I think, once again demonstrates that the steady state is very, very bipartisan. It is the establishment. And Pelosi's probably cheering it on, and as well as many Republicans.
And I think in many ways, this is our interventionist foreign policy coming home to roost. And I'll tell you why. Here's one excerpt from the piece. Many Trump appointees have vowed to protect democratic institutions by thwarting Trump's misguided impulses. Now, if that's not an oxymoron, I don't know what is. We have to destroy the village to save the village. We have to be undemocratic to protect democracy. And this reminds me of every state overseas that the U.S. wants to change the regime. They always say, oh, yeah, they may have been elected democratically, but they're not governing democratically. And that's a justification for the U.S. lining up to do a coup against them. And now we're seeing that mentality come home to roost in Washington.
Yeah, that Trump was elected democratically, but he's not operating democratically, I think is the point you make, and therefore they have to save the country. And they really, when you read that, the tone is that you better be thankful for us. We are the good people. Yeah. We are God. We are protecting your liberties, and we're protecting the institutions, and we're steady, and we're righteous, and therefore we will save you from Donald Trump. Well, I'd like the effort to be designed to save us from the authoritarians. And believe me, that's what we have too much of. We have too many Republicans that are authoritarians, too many Democrats that are authoritarians, too many independents are, but we have a growing number of people who are rejecting now the principle of authoritarianism and accepting the principles of voluntarism. That yes, we want a society where we come together, but always in a voluntary manner. And for them to, people, some, you know, are pretty easy to sort of accept that. But when they think about that nationally, oh no, you could never have this internationally. You've seen some of the complaints. You're so naive. You can't do this. These people are going to be on our borders and they're going to march right across this country and occupy us in no time at all because you're not going to be on their doorstep. So instead, they endorse this whole idea of authoritarianism, right and left, and all the special interests to go to the doorstep of whichever country they think is likely to go after us, go after the Chinese, the South China Sea, or to the borders of Russia, or go to the Middle East. Sadat's coming to get us. Hussein's going to come and get us, and Gaddafi's going to come and get us. We better go and stop them before they get us. And that is ingrained in the system. That, of course, is, as far as I'm concerned, the enemy of liberty, because, wars breed the attack on civil liberties here at home.
Exactly. I think that's just what they want. And you mentioned earlier, and I wanted to read a quote, how some honest progressives are also seeing through this and are very unhappy about it. And one of them is Glenn Greenwald, who we know and have followed a long time, and he makes it very clear. I despise President Trump. I don't like his presidency. I will not be sad when he's gone. But nevertheless, he points this out. And here's a quote from a recent piece that he did. The irony in the op-ed from the New York Times is anonymous White House coward is glaring and massive. He or she accuses Trump of being anti-democratic while boasting of membership in an unelected cabal that covertly imposes its own ideology with zero democratic accountability, mandate, or transparency. Well said.
Yeah, that's for sure. So I would like to go ahead and close and just once again make the point that the non-interventionist foreign policy, the non-interventionist policy in economics and on civil liberties answers a lot of these questions. Of course, you can have a perfect constitution written, and you can have a lot of people who are well-motivated, and yet, if you don't have people of high moral character who's overseeing our government, you know, it's always going to be undermined. And our constitution was systematically undermined from the very beginning. So some of these problems could be solved by following the rule of law, but it takes people who have to understand that principle of rejecting authoritarianism and expecting people to act responsibly and taking care of themselves. Now, the authoritarians are coming out and say, oh, it's not working out the way we thought. This administration, much worse than we ever dreamed. He doesn't deserve to be president. It wasn't legal. And they go on and on. And therefore, we have to save you. And that's what this group is trying to do. It is, if maybe not a literal coup, could be, but at least a philosophic coup, because we can't allow an individual like this who actually, speaks off the cuff and speak and says some of the things that people you're not supposed to say. But But this, I don't think this is the end of the Republic. The end of the Republic is the rejection of the principles of liberty. That's where the real problem is. But I sort of think that that Trump may come out of this pretty well, and that people are going to respond in a favorable way, because I think for now the New York Times is so far removed from a newspaper and nothing more than a political rag piece that they're going to lose credibility. Maybe they'll even lose more subscribers over all this, for all we know. But I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.